Before we get started on the Bengals Beat podcast, I wanted to let you know that we are now brought to you by 50 West Brewery. They have award-winning beers coupled with a bike shop, canoe and kayak library, volleyball leagues, running groups, and a killer food menu. At 50 West, they pride themselves on adding value to people's lives through beer. Is there a better way to add value to people's lives than through beer? Whether you're looking to take a float down the river and end with a beer or throw back a couple and play some volleyball, 50 West is unlike any other brewery you've ever seen. Check out their website at 50westbrew.com. That's F-I-F-T-Y, westbrew.com for more information. 50 West, where every beer's a journey. Come join for the ride. Welcome into the BBP. This is the Cincinnati Inquirer's Bengals Beat podcast presented by 50 West Brewery. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat writers, Jim Osarski and Paul Weiner Jr., invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out insider news, listen in on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. You can subscribe in iTunes, Google Play, or your preferred podcast platform. Of course, you can always listen in the podcast section of our Cincinnati.com Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome into a special edition, breaking news edition of the BBP, Bengals Beat podcast, presented by 50 West Brewery. Paul Dano Jr. and Jim Osarski, Cincinnati Inquirer, Cincinnati.com. Technically, this is the deuce.
Yeah.
Technically, this is the we weren't really planning on it, and then a bunch of things happened.
Yeah.
Things very much happened. And so here we are, 5 days into the 2017 season.
Just five? Oh.
Sunday to Thursday.
Yeah.
It is only Friday, and heads have rolled. And we are already at scapegoating time.
Yeah.
As the Bengals lose to the Texans 13-9, first of all, for the second straight game, do not score a touchdown, and have a whole lot of questions overnight, get up the next day, and decide to replace coordinator Ken Zampezi with quarterbacks coach Bill Lazor. So here we go. I mean, we've talked about urgency a lot.
Yeah.
This is the first time in the 50-year history of this franchise they have ever fired a coordinator during the season. There's been coaches have been fired during the season. Dave Shula.
Right.
Bruce Coslett left. There's things like that, but never has a coordinator been removed during the season. And this was two games into the 2017 season. Boom, out. And they're looking for some kind of a spark. The only question, it wasn't a question of matter, should they do it? I mean, that seemed apparent. This offense has been what it's been for 18 games.
Yeah.
It was, would they do it, though? Would this franchise do it? And, The urgency is in the action.
Yeah, they put banners up this year. honored former players. So, I mean, you know, you're going to do something for the first time.
Changing it up.
You know, just got to do it that way, right? No, it, and Paul, I think it was more than just a 9 points, no touchdowns in two games thing. I mean, it's 18 regular season games.
Yes.
It's also, 65 or so. Go to Cincinnati.com. We broke the numbers down. It's like 65 or so first string plays in the preseason that ended with an Andy Dalton red zone interception, an Andy Dalton fumble, two field goals, and one touchdown and a bunch of punts. I mean, so the hope of the offseason of change and being better and healthy guys. I mean, you didn't see it anyway. You know? So then two regular season games in, it didn't get better.
No. It looked significantly worse. And really, when it comes down to it, any team that
is looking at making a change like the Bengals made today is doing it because of the quarterback.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. And Andy Dalton has looked like a player through these last two games that has regressed.
Yeah.
From what he was. I mean, he doesn't look like the same guy that he even was last year. And he took a tick back last year for a number of reasons.
Yeah, kind of, you know, and we'll see how open guys are in the coming week, Paul. But, you know, this weekend, kind of hearing some things that one of the bigger struggles for Andy these two games preseason-wise even was like basically Andy's an analytical quarterback. Right, we always hear about how smart he is, all the RPOs, changing of the line. Ken Zampezi is the same way, and maybe that wasn't a good match together in terms of just, you know, Hugh Jackson and Jay Gruden. For as much as people give credit for what they did in the numbers, like it was fairly simple, what I've kind of gathered a little bit, at least with what they asked Andy to do. You know,
keeping it simple, you know, that's something that Paul Gunther and Mike Zimmer talked a lot about on defense is you can't overdo it with guys too much. At a certain point, you got to let your players go play. And I think when you take what you just talked about, the over analytical mindset, and then you throw in all these different weapons they're trying to use, playing everybody.
Right.
We're playing three running backs. We're playing six receivers. We're playing multiple tight ends.
Yeah.
We're trying to work in these new offensive linemen all in the same time. We're like, maybe we're going to chip sometimes. We're trying to do, we got to get A.J. Green the ball. We got to get Tyler Eifert the ball. And let's get John Ross some snaps and treat him like a running back. And, and let's do all this, Joe Mixon and Gio and Jeremy Hill.
Right.
It becomes too much for everybody.
Yeah.
It becomes too much for everybody, and it just looked like a team that was trying to do far too many things and not doing any single thing that they hang their hat on, right?
Right, which is – that was at the end of last year. And A.J. Green kind of – I hate to say popped off, but he did. A.J. Green kind of popped off a little bit post-game. And last year when he decided to speak, that was one of the things he said, was we don't have an identity.
Yeah.
And through two games, you don't have that. And look, that could be anything, and that could be good or bad, to be honest. I mean, but you want to have something.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you could hang your hat on this offense in the last 18 regular season games, which, you know, unfortunately for Ken Zampezi, that was the – kind of the death knell there with his first turn as a coordinator in this league. I mean, there just wasn't – what could you point out, Paul, that you could say they do this really well or at a high level that just kind of disappeared in the last year plus?
They do a lot of horizontal passing. They don't do it well necessarily, but they did a lot of it, and it was – you know, that's a whole other thing. The other side of this, and we'll get to Bill Lazor in a minute, you mentioned A.J. Green popping off. You know, last year, the offensive line thing, the identity thing, and we've said this multiple times on the BBP, when A.J. Green speaks, he has the ears of everyone in the building, like nobody in the building does, not like Marvin Lewis,
right?
Not like any of the coordinators, any of the coaches, not like any player. He has more pull behind his words than anybody else, because he is a superstar, and everybody knows it.
Yep.
And so, kind of when this comes out, and like the headline said in the morning, is we looked into the fact that we were thinking changes were coming. AJ Green fumes. Does that mean changes are coming? Because when AJ Green says something like this, like he did after the game, when he was vehemently talking about not getting the ball, play calling, using the dreaded running the routes that are called line. Right. No coordinator ever wants to hear your superstar say. Right. And, you know, all of that, saying our superstars have to get the ball and they're not getting the ball. And I mean, just a straight arrow to the play calling. You knew right then. And so some people say, oh, it's just like it's like LeBron James or something. Well, you know,
yeah.
On this team, it's as close to that as it gets.
Yeah, Dre Kirkpatrick, basically someone relayed those message comments to Dre post-game. And like, the locker room's huge, so he didn't actually hear them. Dre was like, he said that? Okay. Well, I'm going to roll with that because that dude matters. You know what I mean? So, and here's the thing with AJ. He's not saying throw me the ball 22 times. Now, it kind of came down to a little bit maybe the last drive. Look, AJ came out preseason and said, look, Julio Jones didn't have 1,800 yards. They went to the Super Bowl. I think AJ's speaking more of, you know, Tyler Eifert's lack of, I don't know, presence.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody, even John Ross.
He specifically mentioned Ross and LaFell.
Yeah. So, you know, Bill Lazor said, you know, look, I don't know what AJ said. And that's true. Most of these coaches are so insulated. They don't really read or know. But other people pay attention.
Yes.
And
the people that were sitting in a room together making this decision this morning pay attention.
Yeah. And I don't think, I mean, look, I don't want to be like AJ Green got a coordinator fired. That didn't happen. I think Marvin, and we'll get into Marvin too here, Paul. It sounded like Marvin kind of had his mind made up post game. Like, if you rewind it back with what he didn't say.
Yep.
And he kind of, you know, tried to Heisman us, or he did Heisman us this afternoon or Monday after Friday
afternoon.
What day is it today? Friday afternoon.
It's Friday. So. We received multiple Heismans in the last 24 hours.
So, but that, but so, you know, Marvin had, you know, he wasn't in the locker room to hear AJ. He talked to us before that. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, I don't really want to make it sound like AJ got fired, but
but that matters.
It does matter.
And
His input matters.
And his input definitely matters. And it's not that he said it to us, because you better believe he said that.
Oh, yeah.
To coaches, to players, and his voice reflected that of what players have been saying for a long time.
Yeah.
But the other players don't have the pull to say it, and it matters. And AJ Green said multiple times, kind of during his speech, so to speak, of, as a leader on this team, I have to provide a spark. I have to do certain things.
Yeah.
As a leader on the team, he was saying what everyone else was saying. And he sat there to anybody that wanted to walk up to him and hear him say it.
Yeah.
And because it was obvious. You don't have to be a genius to watch the first two games and know that a change is needed. So here's what I'm going to do. Let's bring in a little bit of the audio is not great on AJ Green. His locker's right next to the shower, and there was lots of screaming and yelling going on. It was just kind of louder than it normally was, and AJ speaks lightly. So I'm kind of piecing together a little bit of what you can hear fairly well. So here's some of AJ Green after the loss to Houston.
The ball still my way, I'm gonna make it, try to make a play, what it is, whatever the coverage is or whatever it is.
Is he getting it to you? Enough? I mean, is he trying to get it to you or not?
I think play calls to get it to me, but it's not coming.
So. Thank you.
Would you say your prevailing emotion is right now? Are you surprised, disappointed, pissed?
All above. But NFL, man, professionals. Like I said, this is a roller coaster. I signed up for this. Gotta ride it. Gotta ride it until it gets better. I know it's not gonna change the way I work, the way I go about my business. I just gonna continue to work my butt off and see what happens. That's all I can do.
And when Joseph and then Johnson went out, do you think maybe your numbers should have been called a little bit more? I mean, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Like I said, man, I don't control the play calling. I just go out there and run the play.
On the 51-yard pass, did you feel like that kind of brought some life in the offense, you know, a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. I thought we had that put a spark, lit a spark on this a little bit. Again, we started out, and like I said, we gotta get better. You know, I gotta get better.
Like, they were calling a lot of underneath stuff tonight. Do you wish they would have thrown it downfield more?
Right. Like I said, man, they play a lot of two men. I feel like we were just running coverage, running off right into the underneath, man. So, like I said, we just got to do better with that. We just got to do better, you know, seeing the defense, communicating with Zamp and stuff like that so we can make some adjustments when they start doing that.
Do the players get any input and things like that?
Sometimes. But like I said, I always put my input on whether they tell you or not. Just know that I know what's going on. I'm out there playing, so of course it should happen.
Marvin pointed to execution a lot in his post game. You know, what as a unit, maybe as wide receivers, what do you guys need to do better?
I said, man, I feel like the receiver group, man, we're doing a great job. Just got to make more plays. Let's start with us. You know, this offense doesn't go without us. So I feel like we got to get involved more early, and get Joe the ball early, get John the ball earlier, and go off that.
So there's AJ Green saying his piece. And so now Bill Lazor. So what will the difference be, right, is the first
right.
question. What is going to be changing?
Right.
With you're just taking a guy who you're saying, oh, well, your quarterback is regressing or taking steps back, and you're promoting his quarterback coach is the first reaction. But to me, this is about experience as a in-game play caller.
Yeah.
Ken Zampezi just did not have that in him.
No.
He just didn't. The adjustments, I mean, I think every single time I've talked to anybody about this, and you have to be sick of hearing about it, but the making play calls when you have to have one through the flow of the game killed him last year. 23 drives.
Yeah.
The game within a score. Score one touchdown. You've got to be able to make those play calls, and I don't think if he had that skill. Now, Bill Lazor, will he have that skill? I don't know, but he's done it multiple times before on multiple levels. It's at least something that's part of his makeup. Ken Zampezi had never done that before until this time.
Yeah, real quick on Lazor, offensive coordinator in college at Virginia, quarterback's coach in Washington, Seattle. I want to say Seattle. For sure, Philadelphia, OC in Miami for 27 regular season games. He, too, was fired.
Yes.
In that disastrous year of 2015 for them when they fired everybody at, like, various points, including Kevin Coyle.
Including Kevin Coyle.
But so 27 regular season games, 8 preseason games. So he, at least you're right, Paul. He's done that. And really, we asked him, you know, philosophical changes, and he's like, look, maybe that'll shake out. But Sunday's about scoring points. In Green Bay,
finding a way to beat the Packers.
Really? So, honestly, we're not going to know any of that until it actually happens. Those first 15 plays in Green Bay are going to be really interesting. I say that because usually OC's script, and he's a West Coast guy, a Chip Kelly guy, like, you know what I mean. So it makes sense that he would do that.
To me, when you come in during the season. There's just only so much you can do.
Exactly.
You can't. Suddenly going to become, a different type of offense. This is going to be the same stuff, but you're just altering the way what you emphasize. You're altering
right.
what you run, how you run it, and maybe the personnel usage.
Yeah.
He would not comment specifically on what he's going to do. If he's going to stay a 3 running back system, Jeremy Hill had. Kind of been phased down a little bit.
Yeah.
Giovanni Bernard got about 50% of the snaps against Houston, and then Joe Mixon and Jeremy Hill kind of split the rest of it. Will that continue? I don't know. That has seemed to not – I mean, it's not like they've been killing it on the ground. So
no, as a trio,
who knows if
I think it's
working.
Like 3-4, 3-6 yards per carry.
And Bill specifically mentioned to us the first two things you have to do at the beginning of every game is get your running back a rhythm and get your quarterback a rhythm. Getting your running back the rhythm at the beginning of a game doesn't exactly go well when you put him in for one drive and then he doesn't see the field until late in the second quarter. So potentially that could signal something. We don't know. I mean, we don't know what he's going to do there. Are you going to see maybe a little less of trying to weave all of these different pieces in
right.
and just putting guys out there? Is that John Ross more often? Is that just sticking with, you know, Cody Core? Does Cody Core need to be playing at all on offense? Probably not, right? You've got enough players. I mean, whatever the hell's going on with Tyler Boyd.
Right.
Who was...
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, that was...
Oh, I mean, you talk about buried.
Under the rug real quick.
Tyler Boyd's
yeah.
like, thank God no one's talking about right. me, because the guy who started every game since he's been here as a second-round pick last year as a slot receiver suddenly was healthy scratched against
right.
Houston, because clearly something is going on there
right.
behind the scenes, because Marvin Lewis did reiterate after, and there's fines that come down if you mess around with claiming injuries and not
yeah.
injuries, because that it had been floated out there that there was an
yep.
injury thing. Marvin Lewis said very clearly there was no injury. This
yeah.
was my decision. Tyler Boyd was not going to dress. So what is going on there?
Right.
We don't know. But Alex Erickson played instead of him. So there's all these things out there, all these pieces. I mean, think about all the names I just mentioned
yeah.
that are in and out and changing and whatever. And then, oh, by the way, the offensive line still is not good.
Yeah.
So, all of that is really on your plate, finding ways to emphasize and simplify
yeah.
what they're doing and just go out there, we do this and do it, is really, I think, what you're looking for from Bill Lazor.
Right. And when we say simplify, and Andy Benoit in Sports Illustrated is really good at film breakdowns, you know, he kind of, he wrote quickly sort of about what I had heard too, where simplify doesn't mean less motion or less pre-snap stuff, because that's actually what Andy Dalton does really well.
Yeah.
It's the calls within that stuff. So as you listen to this podcast and you're trying to forecast what could happen, you know, don't be surprised to see shifting and motion and all of those things, because, again, that plays your quarterback strength, and it really just sets up guys to be in a successful spot. You know, like we go back to 15 and sort of the early part of the year success, like the Andy moving Tyler Eifert into a position to score a touchdown, you know, A.J. Green's 80-yard score where he's moving Gio around. I mean, look, there's a lot of movement there, but when you actually watch it happen, it's a pretty simple thing. It's yeah. one to two reads. It's look, Andy can move and progress. Look, but you can't ask a quarterback to make four reads when your O-line is horrific
yeah.
by PFF standards. If you're into PFF, their average is 70 to 79. All of these dudes are like around 50
yeah.
for the year or less.
Jake Fisher posted a 26,
yeah,
I believe.
So there's a lot. I mean, look, Ken Zampezi, no one's surprised and whatever, but clearly there are some other limitations that he had to work around, couldn't figure it out. Bill Lazor's going to have to do it.
Yep. So let's do this. Let's wrap it with one more thing, and then I want to bring in Bill Lazor, our conference call with Bill Lazor right after he was hired. So there's some newness to it. This is pretty much just introductory. He's just kind of learned all of this just a few hours before.
Right.
So, you know.
Real quick, and then I set this up, and then we got to get to Marv.
You want to get to Marv?
Oh, we got to do Marv today. we'll do it quick.
We'll go in on Marv. All right. Well, let's first of all, we got to pick our jolly,
yeah.
our jolly plumbing jack-of-all-trades player of the week. So, of course, with our new jolly plumbing jack-of-all-trades player of the week, we're looking for a guy who puts in an honest, hard day of work, doesn't ask for accolades. So this week we're choosing between Alex Erickson, Sean Williams, and Jordan Willis. Alex Erickson steps in for Tyler Boyd, plays, and does what he always does, produces,
yeah.
makes plays.
True.
I mean, he was out there. He had a nice return. He had a couple nice receptions, and apparently they decided to feature him completely solely on the game-winning drive attempt.
Didn't really work out, but
that
yeah.
did not work out. No. That might have been kind of, yeah. three targets on the game-winning drive attempt. And Sean Williams comes back from his elbow injury, I mean, earlier than I think we thought.
Yeah.
And you got to credit a guy who goes out there and says, we need this one. This is a big one. I'm ready to go. Let's just go do it. Jordan Willis makes his first career start in place of Michael Johnson, was a big part of the rotation up front. Who's your Johnny Plumbing, jack of all trades, player of the game?
Well, I do like Sean Williams, but I do think the fact that Alex Erickson, look, he is a specialist, so I'm not surprised, I guess, by that. But, hey, to have to step up, probably knowing just before game time he was going to play a bigger role and actually get open and make himself available for Andy Dalton as much as he could, I'll go with Alex Erickson.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, Sean Williams is tough. I hate to say no because, I mean, just getting back and playing almost every snap, you miss one snap, it's really remarkable. But I'm with you. I think Erickson, as far as the true jack of all trades, which is the heart of what this award is, I'm with you. I think he really did a little bit of everything and stepped up. I mean, the coaches said, we're going to give you a shot because you have produced when we've been giving you opportunities. And he kind of made the most of it. So that's it. Our Jolly Plumbing, jack of all trades, player of the game, Jolly Plumbing, the honest choice for your plumbing needs. Okay, let's go now, Marv.
Yeah.
So – obviously, we walked out of the stadium in the middle of the night, with an idea. I mean, it's too obvious with the extra time, with what we had heard in the locker room. They had to do something. I don't know how you could possibly go forward not doing something.
Yeah.
Right?
To set it up. So really, the fact that Marvin on Thursday night didn't. What he wouldn't say, he's like, I'm not talking about any of this here. Today's not the day to talk about it. So it's like, okay. Yep. I mean, he gave Andy Dalton it's not the quarterback's problem.
Yep. But when he asked really, about changes elsewhere,
yeah,
I'm not going to talk
so
about that
So that prepared
here.
Us for Friday. You know, being ready for a change. It just made too much sense. You wrote about it. It happens a lot in this league now with second week Thursday games.
Yeah.
you know, let's be – just stuff we knew – so Marvin comes in at 1 o'clock by himself, kind of surprising.
Scheduled press conference
Scheduled
at 1
press
o'clock.
Conference,
and
yes.
We're sitting there like wondering, are they going to set up multiple mics?
Right.
Who is even going to walk in here?
Right.
I think it's like, who comes out door number two, right?
Yeah. And it was just Marv.
It was just Marv. So I think, okay.
And just, you know, so I asked, hey, are you, is it just the 11 guys? Because he opened with, you know, it's execution.
Right.
You know, so I kind of softballed him a little bit and said, hey, is it just the players on the field?
Yep.
Said, no, it's all of us. And then you followed up with, are you convinced Ken can turn it around? He didn't answer, basically.
No.
He said, Ken works hard.
Ken works hard, and then he's like, but it's not good enough.
Right.
And you thought, okay.
So then you followed up with, you know, so are there no changes? And he just said, nice try, you know, because he realized it's the same question I asked, but direct. I tried to go inside. I tried to go in the side door.
Came in the side door. I tried to come in the front, and then I tried to just come in the window because I was like, so you're saying no changes, right?
And he wouldn't say that.
But he didn't. He didn't say that. He just said he wouldn't tell us that.
Right. He said that's private to us.
Listen, this is the exchange.
So for execution, then, Marvin, is it strictly on the 11 guys on the field?
No, I think it involves everybody. It involves all of us. You know, it's what is how we formulate our plan, how we execute our plan, and how the plan is called all the way through. So I can't, you know, we've got to make sure we're doing the right things with our people and attacking the opponent as well.
Last night that it wasn't the time to, I guess, talk about potential changes to personnel or staff or anything, but with 10 days between last night and Green Bay, are all things on the table regarding?
Well, we have to get better, but I'm never going to come in here and tell you anything we're going to do one way or another, so you know, that's what we do is private to us. Well, he's worked incredibly hard at this, and he had a good command of the things we've done throughout, and we've got to do, you know, but we're not getting the results we need to get.
Thank you.
Again, I told you, I just answered your partner there. It was a nice try, though.
So no changes. Yeah.
So we're not going to discuss any of that in here.
Did you say this is ridiculous?
Yeah.
So that, hour and a half later, make the move.
Yep.
Why has it got to be like
right,
that?
And all it comes down is just a statement from Marvin. Yep. Oh, okay, I didn't, you know, whatever. I didn't even read it. You know? I mean, so now here we go on Monday. We're going to have to ask him about it, and he's going to say, we're on to Green Bay, or, you know,
right,
whatever. Which, actually, I would find amusing if that's all he did was say, we're on to Green Bay. We're on to Green Bay.
Right.
Go. But it's just, checking. Come on, man. You know what I mean? Like, just look,
show
you
up
knew,
with Laser next to you.
You knew, in my opinion, Thursday night, how it was going to go down. And maybe he had to go upstairs and convince it and make it happen. You know, but just say it.
Just say it.
Just say, look,
own
hey,
it. You're going to, if that's what you're going to do, do it, own it, put Bill Laser right next to you and do that.
And just take the, like, take honest to God, like, there's no, look, you know, we made fun of Blame the Media guy last week. Like, the harder questions, are you doing the dance?
Yeah.
If you were to just sit down and say, you know what, hey, we're making a change at offensive coordinator, we haven't scored enough, that pretty much ends it.
That would be it. You could end. You could walk off.
Honestly.
The only question left would be, who are you promoting?
Right. And then he would say Bill Laser. And,
say, okay.
And then it's like,
why
yeah,
him,
it makes
and
sense.
Then that's it.
So, to me, I just really didn't understand. I don't know if he thought he was doing Kenny a solid by, you know, having it leaked to NFL Network an hour later. You know what I mean? I don't know. It was just one of those things that, like, you know, it's private to us until it's not. And it was just it was just one of those weird things, you know. The players were already gone. I mean, there was no locker room, but guys were kind of wandering around.
There was
but
no
they were
reason.
Already gone at that point.
There was no reason for it to go down that way.
Yeah, so it was just, I don't know, I thought it was kind of weak.
It was kind of weak.
It was kind of weak. And if you read the news story, it might be written that way.
It might be. So BBP listeners always get the insider, you know, tint. All right, so let's wrap this thing up. Yeah. We have John Ross's. John Ross had a really good hot seat with Doc on Tuesday from Beyond the Stripes. So I wanted to. I thought that was just going to disappear into the ether and never find a place for it. But now, since we did this emerging BBP, I want to bring it to you because
it was really
it was legitimate. Like, I'm not just saying it. It was really good, super entertaining. With Doc. So if you want to listen to that, that is on the back end here. You can hear a little bit more about John Ross. And then also before that, our conference call, a portion of it, with new Bengals OC Bill Laser. So we will be back onto our normal schedule finally. We'll be back on our normal schedule with the BBP on Tuesday next week. And then next Tuesday night, Carl Lawson will be our guest at Beyond the Stripes. At Holy Grail Banks. So come on down there, 7 o'clock. We're there on every Tuesday, and check us out. All right, so let me get out of here. Bill Laser coming up next on a conference call, and then John Ross on the hot seat. We will talk to you later.
Hey, Bill. I'm sure this day has been quite a shock for you, but kind of take us through what the day has been like. Were you surprised at everything that's happened in the last hour or so?
I think when you've been in this league long enough, you see a whole bunch of different things happen, so not many of them are shocking anymore. I think it's a day when you come in after a tough loss and you try to figure out how you're going to make it better, and obviously it took some different turns, but we're still just trying to focus on how we can make it better.
AJ Green was visibly frustrated last night, and I think you all know that that's not really like him. Did those comments kind of resonate at all through the coaching staff?
Does it surprise you if I say I did not? I don't know what his comments were.
No, but he was saying that he wished he had gotten targeted more or been more involved towards the end of the game last night. And like I said, it's kind of rare for AJ to be so vocally frustrated. but if you didn't hear
it. I know this. I've been around AJ long enough to know what kind of professional he is. And a lot of us are frustrated with the lack of production we've had so far, and I think one of the important things is that we all also share the burden of why that's been that way. And I think when we all honestly look at what's happened, what hasn't happened, what we can do to fix it, then we'll work for, you know, the fastest way possible to get it better. Usually with players, some places players get a whole lot of input, some places they get a little input. Some players get a whole lot, some get a little input in what's happening. But when guys earn the ability to have input, that's probably the best way, and I don't think there's anyone around here that doesn't trust AJ.
Bill, hey, Coach, what are the first three things you're going to do, and maybe you've already done them?
I'm trying to start my list of those three things. I haven't gotten to three yet because people keep coming in to interrupt me and ask me to do conference calls. I think the first thing we did is we sat and met as an offensive staff. After Coach Lewis spoke to the entire staff, we sat and met as an offensive staff and had a chance to talk and set some of the philosophies. Trust me, things have happened very fast. I think we'll have a chance to convene tomorrow morning after everyone has a chance to take in what's happening, and we'll go forward a lot faster after that. But the most important thing, I think, for today is just the relationships with the coaches on the staff and being all together and being prepared to move forward.
How does your offensive philosophy differ from Ken's?
I think at this moment, what we have to view is, okay, where are we as an offense? And we've spent an awful lot of time, and I say we, everyone that's in the building, we spent an awful lot of time building what we have as an offensive system, as an offense, and trying to gear it towards the particular players that we have. So what we need to do, the philosophy, is to score as many points as we can to beat the Packers. That's it. And then we'll take it from there, especially when something like this happens during the season. You can't go much further than that. It would be nice if you could, but we've got a real tough task at hand, and so we're just going to tackle that, and we'll let the philosophy kind of work its way out as we go.
Bill, you've been on the flip side of this in Miami. What did you take from that experience, you know, going forward into this one?
Well, that's a great question. I think personally you take from it that these opportunities are hard to come by, and when you get them, you know, you got to do everything you can to make them work. I mean, that, I don't know, it kind of sounds like a cliche a little bit, but I think it just, the reality of that hits you. I think maybe today I'm really thinking more about Ken, you know, having been through it from the other side, and knowing how much he put into it, you know, and feeling badly and trying to be humane about that.
Hey, Bill, obviously there's a reason for this, both on-field production-wise, but even timing-wise, for you. How do you kind of go into the prep part of this for this weekend and then leading the room on Monday, you know, when things get back? So obviously last time you were in this position, you had a whole offseason to kind of put this together.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. I guess the positive is that there are a lot of relationships already built. I'm really, at the moment, focused on tomorrow morning's offensive staff meeting, because I think that's going to lay a lot of groundwork as far as just how it goes when we meet with the players on Monday. And really, I think maybe it's a little bit of a pragmatic approach, but let's focus on beating the Packers and what we have to do, and the big picture things will kind of take care of themselves.
Coach, you plan, how do you shift responsibilities at all, or any, I mean, like, does anybody take over quarterbacks, or how are you going to keep doing the quarterbacks?
I think there'll be minor shifts, but that'll be decided as we go forward. I expect to continue to be in the quarterback room.
Bill, this is kind of a logistical thing you may not have even thought about yet, but do you know if you'll be on the field or in the booth or how you'll approach it that way?
Not prepared to make that comment yet. Okay. Good question.
Yes.
What did you do in Miami?
In Miami, first preseason game I was on the field. Second preseason game I was in the booth. And by unanimous decision of head coach, quarterback, and myself, I spent the rest of the time on the field.
I don't know, Bill. I mean, there's a reason these things are done. I guess for you, is there? I know, like you said, it's about scoring more points, and you've got to really dive into it. But you know, Andy hasn't played real well. In just a lot of areas. What do you see? I mean, you've been with them now for year plus, off season plus. What can you speak to his? Where he's been struggling these last two games, and where you can maybe bring him going forward here.
Well, in a very small amount of time today, I've thought about, you know, when the game starts, as the coordinator, and in some games you have different plans, but two of the most important things that you have to do are get the quarterback in rhythm and get the running back in rhythm. And we've got a number of good running backs that we're sharing that with right now. But I think as we have some time this evening and tomorrow to think about that, and specifically your questions with Andy, I think a lot of that responsibility will be mine to make sure we get him going. And like I said at the very beginning, this is all of us. We all share the responsibility for that. That's all the assistant coaches, the players as well. And I think when we all recognize that, and are honest about it, then it gives us a chance to do something about it and get better. And I have great respect for Andy, and I know that he wants to be great, and so I know he'll do just that. He'll look at where he can be better, and he'll work with me.
Hey, guys, we've got time for two more questions.
Coach, what's your view of three running backs? Would you prefer
when they all run for 100 yards in the game, I view that as very positive. I haven't done three probably in the past, splitting it equally, but that's where we've been so far.
Do you think that has to be changed?
I don't have any, I hadn't given it a thought to this point today yet. I'm probably just not prepared to answer that one.
Welcome back, everyone. We are back at the Holy Grail Banks. Beyond the Stripes, this is a segment we like to call the hot seat. I haven't made it real hot lately, but maybe I'll start tonight. John Ross III, you are on the hot seat. Do you think there's ever going to be a John Ross IV?
It's funny you say that. I actually do have a child, but his name is Kyrie. You know?
His name is Kyrie?
Yeah. I kind of cut it off a little bit. I shouldn't have, but... I think it's all about, you know, recreating, you know, and giving him a chance to start his own,
right,
you know, generation.
But you still have a chance. I mean, you got a while to go in that,
yeah,
in
right,
that corner of your world. What did John Ross Jr. think about that?
My dad wanted to strangle me. You know, he definitely did. But, you know, I just told him, you know, sometimes some things got to change. I know how tough that was for him to hear, even for my grandmother and my mom. But I just told him I think change is good sometimes.
Okay. You tore an ACL in college, mm-hmm, spring ball 2015, and you have said since then that it was, quote, the best thing that ever happened to you.
Right.
You became a film junkie, yeah, right? Explain that.
Oh, well, not even just so much of being a film junkie. I got to see things in a coach's perspective. And, you know, what that means is I got to sit on the sideline and, you know, watch the defense, watch the offense, you know, watch what the corner's looking at, you know, what the quarterback's thinking, what the receiver was thinking. So I learned so much in a long amount of time. Because when you tell your ACL, it's like it's a six-month process. And so I sat out the whole football season. And I also learned, you know, how to be a veteran, you know, how to slow things down. I gained 20 pounds. You know, I got to focus more on school. I got to speak with my family more. So it just changed me more as a person, you know, more than it did a football player.
You also asked graduate assistants to cut up for you on the tape every catch by Antonio Brown, mm-hmm, Odell Beckham Jr., Brandon Cooks, and Julio Jones. Are you missing someone there, bro?
Yeah. Well, the difference. Well, I never got to see AJ play, so I can be completely honest. You know, so my first day out in camp, I'm watching 18 run routes and I'm watching him get off the ball, and I'm just like,
how did you not have tape of AJ?
Right,
or request tape of AJ.
And I'm like, why don't we get Bengals games on the West Coast? You know,
exactly.
So I'm seeing this tall guy just, you know, snatch balls out the air. I seen him fall on the ground before the ball was thrown, get up and dive for a ball and catch. So I'm just like, this is like, I've never seen someone with this kind of skill set. You know, and it kind of bummed me out, you know, that I never got to watch him play and learn from him.
So you tear the ACL, you do a lot of film study, but you also have your phone screensaver counting the days, minutes, and seconds to that opening game at the University of Washington the following fall, correct?
Right.
And right after that surgery, you have a dream, literally. Mm-hmm. And that dream was?
So I had a dream that it was a kickoff return, and it was every team that we were playing, different helmets. Every player had, like, everybody in the Pac-12 had, it was their helmets, and they kicked me the ball, and I ran the kickback.
Opening kickoff.
Opening kickoff.
Now, the first game you were back, your coach wins the toss, but he defers.
Defers.
So you do not take the opening kickoff back.
Right.
So that dream didn't come true until?
The second half.
That's what happened the second half.
Second half, I got the kickoff return. 96 yards touchdown.
Took it to the house. So
right
the
to
dream
the house.
Actually, the dream actually became reality.
Right.
Wow. You have a few mentors. Mm-hmm. Let's start with Calvin Broadus. Mm-hmm. Do people know who Calvin Broadus is?
I don't think people know who Calvin Broadus is.
Who's Calvin Broadus?
Calvin Broadus is actually Snoop Dogg.
Correct.
Why does
he call himself Snoop Dogg? Calvin seems like a pretty good name to me.
You know what? That is a good question.
And you know the answer to that?
I've never asked him that question.
Really?
Yeah. I know why people people say he looks like a dog. You know, so he looks like an actual
dog. He kind of does.
Yeah, he does, actually. So
yeah.
That's what I think he gets the dog part from.
Now that you're of age, do you sip gin and juice?
I've never, ever had a drink in my life.
You've never had a drink in your life?
Never had a drink in my life.
Any desire?
Gatorade.
I mean, you're illegal now.
Right, right.
Gatorade.
I'm a Gatorade guy.
All right. Calvin Broadus was your football coach in Long Beach as a kid. How old were you when he was your coach?
So I started playing for Calvin when I was seven. I started at seven, then from seven to 12, he kind of took us on trips. Like when I was seven, we played the day before Big Ben, and the Steelers played in the Super Bowl in the Lions Stadium.
Right. 7 years old.
7 years old.
You're playing the day before the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and also ran the opening kickoff back.
It's a good thing they don't take kids' sports seriously in Long Beach. Anyway, go ahead. So he was serious about this.
Right.
He was at every practice.
Right.
He called plays.
Yes.
He'd stand in the huddle of all these little guys.
Yep.
Snoop would. Mm-hmm. Did you ever call him that? Or did you call him Mr. Broadus? Or what'd you call him? Mr.
Well,
Dog.
We called him Coach Dog.
Coach Dog.
Yeah, Coach Dog.
All right. But he was serious.
Very serious. We watched film the day before the games at his house. We ate at his house. And
7-year-olds watching film.
Yeah. It was that serious for him.
What was, quote, the 6'2 dog house?
Now, 6'2 doghouse got called, everyone gets happy because we always run a 6'2 doghouse on the first play, and that was a defensive play. So when they call 6'2 doghouse, I mean, everybody was going. Doesn't matter.
Max blitz.
Doesn't matter if it's a pass or anything. Everyone goes.
You got a bunch of 7-year-old cappers blitzing another 7-year-old mm-hmm. quarterback on the other side of the –
and everyone was tackled with or without
it was
the
tackled.
Ball.
Yeah.
Everyone
Poor
was.
Guy. How many quarterbacks do you take out in the first play of the game?
We had someone crying every game.
Someone crying every game?
Every single game.
What did Snoop teach you about football?
I think the biggest thing, you know, just looking back when I was a kid is you got to have fun with it. You got to have fun with it. And – the relationships you build are never meant to be broken. The guys that I grew up with, you know, when I was 7 years old on those teams, I played with some of them in college. I played against them in college, you know. So, you know, just to see how far we came, you know, I think it's good for us to, you know, keep those relationships. Yeah. And when we have children, you know, we pass it on to them and they pass it on and just, you know, we give back to the community as Snoop did.
What did he teach you about, or what did you teach him about rapping?
I'm actually a horrible rapper.
You what?
You said rapping?
Yeah.
What did I teach him?
What did you teach him about rapping?
If I would have taught him anything, he probably wouldn't make another album. So.
No?
Yeah.
You're not good at that?
No, I'm not good at all.
All right. You shook Ben Roethlisberger's hand at that Super Bowl, right? Yeah. You had sleepovers at Snoop's house nights before games. You got offers from UCLA and Washington when you were 14. Mm-hmm. You'd think that you might have a bit of a big head by now. But one of your former coaches said this about you, a guy named Bush Hamden.
Right.
Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
He was your position coach in college. Now he's a quarterback's coach of the Falcons.
Yes.
Said, quote, John Ross lives in this world with flashy guys and big names, but really he's just this sweet, gentle kid. Why would he say that?
I just, I think that's another thing that, you know, after I tore my ACL, I've always been a humble guy and very modest because I just feel like all that stuff is like glamour and it's for other people's opinions, and I kind of don't care about what other people think. You know, I tell my little brothers that all the time, like, don't worry about what's going on in the outside world, because you got to live your life, you know. If you do right by yourself and do right by other people, you know, everything will come to you. You know, I feel like I've been counted out so many times in my life, and, you know, people would tell me I wouldn't get drafted in the first round. People tell me I was going to go undrafted, you know, but I never kind of gave up. I've always just stayed true to what my coaches say, worked hard, and it kind of like it paid off for me.
Did you lose in one-on-one basketball to Kelsey Plum?
I'm joking. I'm joking.
We're not supposed to talk about that.
Kelsey is an amazing athlete.
Did you lose one-on-one?
I was trying to get away from it, but I guess. But, you know, I did lose. She beat me pretty bad.
Tell everyone who she is.
Kelsey Plum is a women's basketball player who played at the University of Washington. She was drafted first overall pick this year in a WNBA draft, San Antonio.
Yeah.
San Antonio. And she's phenomenal. I mean, I've never seen a human shoot as well as she can. You know, for her to be her size and her skill set is just unbelievable.
She made her first 11 shots on you.
And we were going to 11, yes. Yes.
Wait a minute. She beat you 11-0.
Yes. Yes.
Does anybody else know that except the people in here? We try to keep that on the QT.
Can we keep that in Holy Grail, please?
Did you play any defense whatsoever?
Well,
just say no. Please say no.
I didn't at all. I let her shoot, and she showed off that great jump shot.
Yeah. Okay. We'll just get right by that one, all right?
Okay.
We'll go to a different topic. Lost to Kelsey Plum. You're 5'10". Back in the day, not that long ago, the NFL liked big, strong wide receivers, right? But lately, the last 5-6 years, the trend has gone the other way. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got Beckham, Antonio Brown, Doug Baldwin, right? Brandon Cooks, T.Y. Hilton, all small guys. Mm-hmm. Why is having a smaller stature these days suddenly an advantage?
I think the game has kind of changed a little bit. I think the speed of the game is kind of the reason why. And these guys have amazing feet work, amazing speed, an amazing big play ability. And I think that's what the league's becoming. You know, it's mm-hmm. becoming a big play league. You know, so I think they've revolutionized the league, and now it's starting to show up. So I think speed is kind of it's in right now, if you would say. And every year it gets better, and I think that's what the league wants. You know, it helps stretch the field, it helps big play mentalities, it helps open up a lot of things for an offense.
Your coach Hamden said also, quote, "John is the kind of guy who can make anyone laugh. Make me laugh." I mean, you just did a minute ago, but I'm not counting that.
I'm, like, not a stand-up guy, though. Like, if you ask me to make you laugh, then I'm going to laugh because I'm very goofy, you know. So I'll start laughing harder than I would try to make you laugh, you know. So I'm more of a guy who I adjust to everyone in the room, you know.
Right.
No matter, you know, what you like or anything, what we like to say is I like to vibe with everyone.
You like to vibe with everyone.
Yeah, I vibe with everyone.
Okay,
so
that's a verb now, to vibe.
Yeah.
I vibe, you vibe, he vibe. Okay.
Yeah, so I just kind of get along with everyone, and I find what that person likes, or just be myself. And, you know, guys usually laugh all the time, so.
Well, we laughed a little bit tonight, didn't we?
Yeah.
All right, I'll give you a chance here. Not something I always do, but I'll do it for you. Since I kind of got you with that Kelsey Plum thing, mm-hmm. do you have any questions, potentially embarrassing questions, that you would like to ask me?
Okay. Did you play sports?
Yes.
What was the most embarrassing thing that happened to you in a sport?
That's a good question. I was a wrestler in high school. There's a lot to be embarrassed about in wrestling, most of which I can't talk about now. Probably having to run in the showers in a rubber suit just about before every match to make weight, because mm-hmm. I was never responsible enough to make weight, and they used to call me Butterball. See, that's pretty embarrassing, right? You got me. John Ross, you're off the hot seat. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. We'll be back for more from Beyond the Stripes.